are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Your audio source for Chicago's theater scene. Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another Epicurean episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Well, coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with the Pirate Queen's Hadley Fraser. He will be talking to Tom Williams about, of course, the Pirate Queen. Also, we have another audio review for your listening pleasure. And, of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So, sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Chicago, and welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of November 20th, 2006. Mamma Mia will be returning to Chicago. That's right, the smash hit musical based on the songs of ABBA will be returning to the Cadillac Palace Theater from December 12th through the 31st. Mamma Mia, with more productions playing simultaneously around the world than any other musical, is now the world's number one show. There are currently 10 productions of Mamma Mia running, and 8 of them are permanent. Mamma Mia was, of course, inspired by ABBA's timeless songs, such as Dancing Queen, Take a Chance on Me, and Money, Money, Money. So again, the play will be running at the Cadillac Palace Theater starting on December 12th. For more information, call 312-902-1400. Again, that's 312-902-1400. Well, it looks like the creators of the Broadway production of Urinetown is accusing the Chicago production at the Mercury Theater of plagiarism. That's right. The designers, along with their unions, have sent a letter to Blue Dog Entertainment stating that significant aspects of the original creative work were used in the production. Now, to get it straight, Blue Dog Entertainment did license the musical, meaning the script and the music. However, the plagiarism in question is on the direction, the choreography, and the design. In a press conference held on Wednesday, the original director of the Broadway production, John Rando, said that he saw the Chicago production and said it was replicated in great, phenomenal detail. The choreographer for the Chicago production did win a Jeff Award for the choreography and has been asked to decline the award in the letter. The letter did also ask for a detailed accounting of all the revenues so that they could receive their appropriate license fees and damages. However, what they really want is an apology. No word has yet come from Blue Dog Entertainment, but stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. You don't want to miss this. Get ready, ladies and gentlemen. Bernadette Peters is coming to Aurora. That's right, she is going to be performing at the Paramount Theater on May 17th. You need to get your tickets as soon as you can. Well, it seems like the Pirate Queen has decided not to extend the production and will definitely close this week. Remember, this is your last chance to see the pre-Broadway world premiere before it closes. Get your tickets. Don't miss it. Is the time for the holiday season. Provision Theater will be opening up its A Christmas Carol at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse on November 25th. Their version is always popular with audiences. Be sure you don't miss it. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it. Hi, I'm Dustin Moat, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. The following review is of Boy Gets Girl. Boy Gets Girl by Eclipse Theater Company, directed by Steve Scott at the Victory Gardens Theater. Boy Gets Girl examines a blind date from hell. What prevents this fatal attraction flip from becoming another cliché is Rebecca Gilman's unfailing intelligence in building an increasingly suspenseful dialogue on the complexity of male-female relationships. Gilman is an acknowledged talent, as anyone who saw Eclipse's recent production of Spinning into Butter will attest, and its current production of Boy Gets Girl is just as assured and thought-provoking. In fact, it may be one of the most satisfying seasons yet for Eclipse, which devotes each season to one playwright. In Gilman, they have a bona fide winner worthy of the honor. The play begins fairly routinely in a restaurant, where Teresa and Tony, two young and attractive professional singles, have agreed to a blind date by a mutual friend, and it's an ill-fated match from the start. Teresa is a well-read reporter for a New York culture magazine who admits that no one she knows will go out with her. Tony is a lonely computer instructor from a small town, alone for the first time in the big city. He's never in one place for long, he claims, and he finds it hard to make connections with other people. Teresa's feminist sensibilities don't mesh well with Tony's old-fashioned gallantry, and she gives him a polite brush-off. But not one to take no for an answer, Tony pursues Teresa at work and leaving an endless series of messages at her home. A female office assistant even becomes his unwitting ally. When Teresa realizes she has a full-time stalker on her hands, she takes out a restraining order against Tony. But that's hard to enforce, according to Detective Beck, who encourages Teresa to make drastic changes in her lifestyle, her living arrangements, and even her name. Well, what's the worst thing that could happen, Teresa asks. You don't want to know, Beck gravely replies. The play asks some penetrating questions about how men see and objectify women. On their first date, Tony wonders if younger men prefer older women because they have lustful desires for their own mothers. Teresa responds that she is only 3 years older than Tony. Teresa conducts an interview with an elderly movie mogul whose sleazy exploitation flicks could be seen as a celebration of women's sexuality or a fetish on large breasts. But according to the filmmaker, it all comes down to the simple rules of physical attraction. Even Teresa's friend and co-worker Mercer Stevens, supposedly an enlightened male who takes women's study classes, confesses to a one-time attraction to Teresa. Mercer draws parallels from the classic movie formula of boy meets, pursues, and ultimately gets girl with Tony's psychotic pursuit of Teresa. Is there a line between voyeurism and stalking, or are they relevant forms of the objectification of women? Just so, Gilman refuses to give her characters easy outs in giving us a multi-layer look at sexual dynamics. Director Steve Scott draws out a strong effort from the Eclipse cast, with particularly harrowing and honest work by Michelle Corvallis as Teresa. Scott Strangland is refreshingly earnest and likable as Tony. Nathaniel Swift is excellent as Mercer, and Shannon Altlin, C.C. Klinger, and Gary Simmers lend memorable support. Boy Gets Girl is another splendid achievement from the first-rate Eclipse Theater Ensemble. The show will run through December 17th in the upstairs studio at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater. That's located at 2257 North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. The play runs for about 2 hours and 20 minutes with intermission. For more information, call 773-871-3000. Again, that's 773-871-3000. You are listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast. I'm Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is from the pre-Broadway world premiere production of The Pirate Queen. He is direct from England. His name is Hadley Fraser. Hello, Hadley.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
Tell us about The Pirate Queen.
Wow, The Pirate Queen. How can I sum this up shortly?
Give us a little introduction for those who haven't seen the show, and tell us about the character you play.
Okay, well, it's from the crew, the authorial team who created Les Misérables and Miss Saigon. You know, worldwide hits, worldwide smashes, and the production team created Riverdance, again an enormous success worldwide. And so these two people have come together and created this extraordinary story about an extraordinary Irish heroine. And she's a pirate, as they say, and she has extraordinary power and extraordinary strength, and she meets Queen Elizabeth along the way. And
this is Grace O'Malley.
Is Grace O'Malley. And along the way, she also falls in love with a guy called Tiernan, who is my character. They're childhood friends, and then they're parted, unfortunately, because they have to, because Grace has to marry elsewhere for political reasons. I'm not going to tell you how it finishes.
Okay.
I just say that it's a romantic epic,
but it's a major epic.
Yeah, and you know, you can maybe guess what happens at the end. But it's a fantastic score by Claude Michel Schoenberg and directed by Chicago's own Frank Galati.
And I think it's just a fabulous show.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
So, tell us how you got cast in the show.
Well, I had worked with Claude Michel Schoenberg and Alain Boubile, the authors, before on a couple of concerts in England a couple of years ago. In fact, in which I sung one of the duets from the show. It was called something different then, but it's still in the show as we speak. So, at the time, I wasn't in the frame, you know, definitely. But I'd also worked with John McColgan, who was our producer, on a play that he directed in Ireland.
Which one was it?
Was called The Shochrón, which is an Irish comedy. And I played a bumbling British redcoat, as I quite often do. So it's quite a nice change to be playing an Irishman this time around, I must say. And so when these two people came together to create The Pirate Queen, I think I sort of had a I was in with a shout, and they brought me over to audition in front of Frank Galati and the rest of the creative team. And as luck would have it, you know, I got the job. And
so this is your first visit to the US, right?
My first time working here. I've been a couple of times on holiday before, but I'm loving working here. I'm loving being in Chicago, and you know, I'm kind of pinching myself, to be honest, all the time.
Well, it's like a dream come true.
Well, it really is. You know, when you're growing up and you're learning your trade in Britain, you never really think that you're going to get to Broadway. I mean, the West End is really the place and the dream to get to if you're a British actor, specifically a British musical theatre actor. You know, the fact that within 4 months, I think I'm going to be on Broadway. I'm kind of pinching myself. I really am. It's an incredible dream come true. Yeah.
Well, I think it's well deserved. And I give us an idea of your background. I know you're from Manchester.
No, I'm from further south, actually. I'm just from outside London, a place called Berkshire.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you went to, give us your background.
Then I went to Birmingham University to do an English degree. And I subsequently went to the Royal Academy of Music in London to do a musical theatre postgrad, which was a great grounding. I met so many great people and had some great tutors there. And I got cast while I was still there in the London production of Les Misérables. I got cast as Marius. And so I left college early to go and start in the West End doing Marius, which was pretty incredible, to be honest.
Yeah, that's right out of, not even finished with school. That's
no,
terrific.
I mean, I...
Speaks to your talent.
Well, I'm not sure about that. It was kind of right place, right time. And they were looking for some fresh talent, because very often some of these shows, the people come back and they redo these characters, you know. But they were looking for someone new, and along I came. So that was a great grounding. I spent a year in Les Mis. And then In the 4 years, really, since then, I've done quite a bit of stage work in the West End. I've done some things.
Tell us some of the shows you did.
I did a production of Pirates of Penzance, which was great fun. I also did the Shochron in Dublin at the Abbey Theatre, which is the home of all of these wonderful Irish writers. I've done Assassins a couple of times, actually, most recently in Sheffield, which was a fantastic production. Playing John Wilkes Booth, so I had to dust off my southern accent and grow a moustache, which was great fun. I did specific overtures as well, actually, very recently. So I'm a great fan of Stephen Sondheim. And,
well, let me ask you now. That begs the question: as a performer and a singer, what's the difference in doing a Stephen Sondheim show and doing a Schoenberg Bouvier show?
Well, I guess from an acting point of view, you have to approach it in the same way. They're both things that you have to approach as an actor and to get the story across first. The thing about most of the Sondheim shows is that they have a book with them as well, which very often allows you to perhaps explore things in, not in greater depth, but in greater verbal detail than you would get in a Bublin Schoenberg show, because majority of it is sung through. I'm a great fan of both, and having done both, it's great to be able to sort of chop and change. I feel that Bublin Schoenberg, their music is perhaps on a more epic scale, on a more sweeping scale. Sondheim is perhaps something slightly more internal and slightly more personal.
Yeah, more character-driven.
Yeah, I mean...
How about singing? Some people say his stuff is almost impossible to sing.
I think from my point of view, it's a joy to sing Stephen Sondheim, because you really get to act through the music. Specifically with the voice, I think he's actually written some beautiful songs and some standalone songs.
Yes, he has. But in the Pirate Queen, you have I think is the big song.
Yeah, I think
that I'll Be There.
I'll Be There is going to be one of those songs that you're going to be hearing.
Yeah, that'll be a classic
in the future. You know, Claude Michel said to me, I think about a year ago before I auditioned, he said, "You have this song, I'll Be There. It's going to be sung by everybody in auditions for the next 20 years. I'll be getting fed up with it, you know?" so I feel...
You sound like him. I've heard about it.
Yeah, well, I just felt incredibly honored to be able to go out and sing this song night after night. And I don't quite think it's hit me yet, actually, what a powerful song it is. You know, I think possibly when we've done a recording a few months down the line, and you know, more and more people get to hear the song and more people get to appreciate it, I think maybe then it'll hit me just what a song it is.
So let me ask you, is this your first world premiere show?
It isn't, actually. I did a world premiere of a musical in the West End last year called The Far Pavilions, which was based on the novel of the same name.
I don't know the show.
Closed after about 6 months, unfortunately. It was a great project, actually, but a difficult one, I think, for audiences to appreciate, because it fused Indian music with Western musical theatre.
Yeah, that can be tough.
Which could be tough. I mean, it wasn't in the realms of Bombay Dreams, which was a sort of Bollywood. It was much more traditional Indian music. It was fantastic, but again, I think it was just a bit too difficult for audiences to appreciate.
So for a young performer, this is your second world premiere.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's my second world premiere musical. I've done a world premiere of a play as well. An Arnold Wesker play called Longitude, based on the novel, based on the story about John Harrison, who invented clocks to go to sea with, and Darvis Sobel, an American writer, wrote a fascinating biography of this guy, and we did the world premiere in Greenwich, actually, where Greenwich Mean Time comes from. So that was very fulfilling as well, to work with I think he's now Sir Arnold Wesker, in fact. You know, he's of the same vintage as Harold Pinter and Tom Stoppard and these great English playwrights. So that was fascinating as well.
Yeah, they had to be fun. So tell us about the rehearsal process now. How long would the rehearsal process go on for a show as big and epic as Pirates?
As enormous and... Yeah, as multifaceted as the Pirate Queen. Well, we rehearsed, the ensemble rehearsed for 2 weeks before myself and the rest of the leads joined. And we rehearsed in New York for about a month. Then we came to Chicago and rehearsed and teched in the theater for another month. And then we had a month of previews. Is that right? Yeah. And now we've had a month of you know, shows having opened. So that's a big old rehearsal period. And as you know, we're going back in a little while to start rehearsals again in New York for the New York leg. So, you know, we have a lot of time to rehearse, which is great because it means you get to explore so much with your character and you never feel like you're underprepared.
So tell us about your character a little bit more.
Tiernan,
tell us why people should care about him.
Why should people should care about Tiernan? Well, he's desperately loyal. He is, I think, you very rarely get constant men, I think, in theater as constant as Tiernan is. You, for instance, I think he sort of plays that role that Eponine does in Les Miserables. You know, that unrequited love, although in this case it is unrequited, but that passion and that fever almost of love that is completely unabated. You know, it will never die, and that's what Tiernan feels for Grace. No matter what happens, you know, with their love, whether they can be together or not, he'll never look at anybody else in the same way as he does with Grace.
Well, on opening night, I could see the chemistry. So how is Stephanie Black to work with?
She's fantastic. You know, we have a great working relationship, and Jesus, I mean, there's some voice on that one. You know, I stand there every night and think, I don't know how you're singing this. I mean, she just belts it out. She's got lungs of steel, and you know, it's fantastic.
Plus, add the ship and the great sets, and you guys are climbing and running around
all over the place and sword fighting, Irish dancing. I mean, Steph has a big old task on her hand. The Pirate Queen is, you know, Grace O'Malley is one of the big parts in musical theater.
Yeah,
at the
but
moment.
Your part isn't exactly a slouch, is it?
It's not a slouch, but you know, I enjoy coming out and singing some beautiful songs and also some beautiful duets with Steph. We have a couple of beautiful duets, I think. Really very stunning music. And, you know, we have a laugh at the same time as well. And, you know, we manage to keep it quite fresh every night and do different things every night, which for an actor, I think, is crucial, really, you know, to keep some energy there.
Well, I think our listeners would like to know it. Like, how much freedom do you have in a show? Because, you know, like I say, you make it fresh every night. They're a little subtle.
Yeah, they can be subtle little things, touches or looks or something like that you might not necessarily have done the night before. Frank, our beloved director, is very, very open to, within reason, to the blocking changing, you know, the positioning on the stage, depending upon the lighting state and so on and so forth. And we have some magnificent lighting, as you've seen from Kenny
Posner.
It's incredible lighting.
It's an award-caliber kind of lighting.
And incredible
sets.
Lighting. Yeah. And so as long as it doesn't disrupt that and it doesn't disrupt what's happening with the sort of stagecraft going on, I think Frank is very, very open. I mean, you see, and I'll be there. Basically, I just have the entire stage to myself and a pretty open lighting state. And Frank just said to me, just do whatever you want to do, whatever you feel like doing every night, which for an actor is fantastic. It means I don't have to hit a certain spot to be in a certain light, which I'm never very good at anyway. And I have felt the wrath of certain
lighting. He wants you to
be
more, just go for the emotion of
it. Just
go
for whatever you feel for that night. So it's a tremendously liberating feeling to be able to have that freedom every night. You know, it's fantastic. Yeah. And I feel very blessed that, because, you know, there are some directors and, you know, some directors, and I completely understand this, who would want a more rigorous structure and who would want you to do the
same. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of them. If you were half a step behind, they'd let you know about
it. And I completely understand that because that's their vision of the show. But Frank's vision is much more sort of open to interpretation, which is great.
So I take it Frank is a good director to work with.
Oh, he's fantastic. I sit there listening to him, and he's kind of this biblical figure. He speaks with an authority and a language that is almost kind of Shakespearean. And
well, yeah, he's a Chicago legend.
And I understand why now. You know, he is so beloved of the cast. I think we'd sort of walk through fire for him, which we actually do at the end of Act One. So you know, that's quite fitting, really.
Yeah, that certainly is.
Yeah.
So you're going to be in the show, of course, in New York.
Indeed, yeah. And I'm looking forward to that.
You've got to be tremendously excited about that.
I can't wait to get to New York and all that it will entail. You know, I don't think I quite understand at the moment just what a big thing that's going to be, you know, being on Broadway, just the kind of thing that I have no concept of at the moment.
Well, the anticipation of it, of that certainly would work real well.
It's going to keep me going, yeah.
What do you see in the future for you? What are your goals over the next 5 years?
I have so many goals, Tom, to be honest. I'd like to stay in the States, you know, visa dependent, to be honest, and hopefully I'll find some way of staying in the States. I would love to do more original musicals. I'd love to tap into do some more screen stuff. I've done a little bit of television in Britain, a little independent film as well, which is something that I'd like to explore as well. For me, you know, variety in what you do is key, and it gives you energy and it gives you more and more motivation as you work along. So I don't know. I never thought that I would even be here 2 years ago. So who knows where I'm going to be 2 years down the line.
Well, I think we'll see when the show is a big smash hit, which I have predicted in New York. And I'm sure you and Stephanie are going to be considered in award territory because it's that kind of a show. I thought you were brilliant in the show.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate
and
that.
Thank you for your time. And folks, if you get a chance to see the Pirate Queen before it closes on the 26th, get there. You'll be amazed.
Absolutely. Come down and see it.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Tom.
And this is Tom Williams saying, go see a play this week.
Well, thank you very much, Chicago, for listening to this Epicurean episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Now we have come to the end of the show, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from Henry IV, Part 2, Act 3, Scene 1. Uneasy lies the head that wears a crown. Well, we can't thank you enough for listening to our little podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.